will we not play a role in keeping groups fluid? And if you will, with preaching, we are friends and we are 20 friends together. And whether it is preaching or it has real deep meaning, whether we do not work and continue along these lines and pure on the playground or picking a team or sitting in a thing where it will not hurt anybody, but that we actually attempt to minimize the groupings, the coming together, the leaving out, and I think thereby the leaving out of one or the other. I don't say that it always works, that there's a clear pattern, but isn't there a certain leadership we're looking toward? And isn't that what our discussion is? Isn't there certain values, social values, that we're working toward? And it's that definition that I would like to see emerge from future discussions. Not in terms, perhaps, of, well, it has to take the form, what can I do so that so-and-so won't be left out, but that somehow we develop some kind of techniques to minimize the leaving out. It's not, I must admit, that being a teacher of sixes, it's not that hard. They cling to us very much. Sixes tend to want approval very much. Just a compliment that a note or kidding a seven-year-old would think was just corn. It goes over with sixes, so we have an easier job. But the real leadership, real group dynamics is a constructed kind of thing that we're working toward and not a friendship grouping kind of thing that emerges.
Yes?
May I just speak, because this is precisely what I've had to work on in my class, because of the situation that existed in the fifth grade, and not completely consciously, I set out to destroy whatever value they had, literally, because it got to the point that when Hazel was picked on a team, the whole team went, you know, or when picking partners for lunch and picking partners for dance, and then I put my foot down and I assign partners for lining up, for going places. I assign seats at lunchtime. I assign, and I have been making the teams. After the first few days, I've been making the teams. The first week I picked partners, I had boys and girls paired together. It was very interesting that during the week that there were boys and girls marching together around the school, there was none of this silly business about girl-boy relationships going on in the classroom. You know, it just totally stopped that. There was none of this giggling and whispering and she like, This week, because there had been so many yakety-yaks about having to march around with the same partner that they had for dance, that I separated them out, and actually only one girl had a boy partner because there are fewer boys than girls. Well, this whole thing has mushroomed up again this week. The whole bit of the has just bloomed, and I don't quite know which is worse, to come with the growling and the yakking and the nastiness of having to move around the room, the school, which this week has been perfect, you know, it's been come almost as good as it possibly can be, or to have this horrible thing. Well, the final thing that happened was that on Wednesday, they had a reading period, a quiet reading period. They all got absorbed in their books. I worked out the partners for the dance, and the very last minute, I turned and put them on the board. I think I heard one person start to go, and I said, I'm not interested. It stopped dead. We went down to dance, and as far as I can see, they had a very successful dance period. No, I don't quite know how
to that writing of friendships or
no,
or
no,
destroying leadership or
no. But I definitely assumed the leadership.
Yeah.
Another thing that I have learned was today, in thinking over this, I thought, well, it would be a good idea for them to begin to examine each other for these particular kinds of qualities. And so I gave them, I said, we're going to have an election. And we're going to, I want you to elect by yourselves privately. And I, you know, they never really listened. I said, I put it on the board for two things. These people are going to divide the class. They're going to go out of the room and divide the class up into two equal teams. And then each one will be captain of a team for a week. And they will arrange you in positions for all games. You know, who runs first, second, third, in a relay race, where they stand, if we play line soccer, who plays what position on the soccer field. And after I put them on the board, some of them had already, you know, written their secret ballots. And I turned around and somebody looked at the door. Is that why we're voting? Is that what we're voting for? And there was a great rush to change the votes. And I said, I'm sorry, I can't give you my handful of I can't go through and find your handwriting at this point. So the class predicted who was going to be elected. It's interesting. Nick was the overwhelming choice, Nicky guessed. George was the second choice. They are about as different as they can possibly.
But they are very good athletes.
Yeah, look, I think we're getting ahead of ourselves. You see, we were going to take class after class. No, that's all right.
But it was interesting because Nick's team didn't win two relay races, and then his team refused to play prison ball. The whole team. They just missed, you know, it was not a case of a vast difference. It was very close to two races, but they just refused.
But Norman, can I still make one point that I might forget to make, and I'd like to make it. That I think that all of this is right, that when we work with these, we have to work on every level, from the sharp saying no, to the working out of working with the individuals, and to working out these relationships within the group. But still the question comes, you know, the independence of the youngsters to work together. And I have the answer, but I know where it works out on the highest level, and that is when there's a group goal that they're working for. For instance, this assembly program, or going on a trip, or working on the mural, or working on a play. When I've seen this so often, when a group has a goal that it's important for them to put across. Now they want this assembly to be good. Then the other little things fall into the background, the pettiness. And I think that I don't know what conclusion I draw from that, but I know that this happens.
Well, they say in time.
Well, I would like to follow that up by saying this, that. We teachers look at our job, I think we always have a tendency to look at one little piece of it. Now, you do have to examine a piece carefully, but then you have to put it together in the whole pattern. There's a school of thinking where you take a child like Janice or Marion, and you take her into the psychiatrist's room, and you think that you're going to work all this whole school situation out by working on her problems. And I think that the same thing can be true in terms of group dynamics. We started out talking about the relationships that youngsters choose to have with each other. That's only one aspect of the whole situation. There are many other relationships in the school. There's a relationship that a youngster has because he comes to this school. His relationship to the school itself, his relationship to his teacher, his relationship to the material that he's studying. And I think that we, you can't look at the behavior of children in a class in itself, just as you can't look at an individual child from the psychiatrist's room. You have to look at these things individually, then you have to put them all together. And I think if we start prescribing before we examine, then we have a tendency to come to facile but inadequate answers. And I think if we proceed as we have, go through the whole elementary school and ask the same question, what are the dynamics of children when they have an opportunity to choose? What kind of leaders do they choose? What kind of relationships do they have? Then after we've done that, then let's look at other things in the situation. For instance, what happens, say, when the group becomes involved in a particular aspect of their work? What happens to these groups and relationships and so on and so forth? So that I think we ought to maybe take about three sessions with this and take still another session just to examine what the patterns are and how they change from first grade to eighth. But just confine ourselves pretty much to what happens when they choose this, because this is a world that we can only slightly see. In the second grade there, we really got quite a glimpse because they do reveal themselves there. But how do you know? There are lots of things you don't know about the youngsters' feelings about each other and their groupness and so on. Let's try to examine that first, then let's go on to other aspects of the group situation, because the children relating to each other is only one aspect of it. There's the authority of the teacher, there's the ability of the teacher to interest children in work, there's the material itself and all kinds of things.
Well, I think as an addition to that, we could get information from the children themselves by asking certain questions to which they
that's
have
an interesting
to
thing
answer,
too.
And then they will tell us in a way whether our reaction to them is as objective as we think it is. You know, so a simple question like, if you had the choice, who would you like to sit near in a variety, you know, a kind of sociogram thing, but in a variety of dimensions, because they live in many dimensions here. And I think that would be one way of hearing from them what they feel about other people. This is what I'm getting out of the work I'm doing with the fifth grade, and it's just, I think, fabulous. It adds to your insight much more than anything else I can think of than other than living with them for a long time, morning, noon, and night.
What's that?
Well, you see, I'm confused by the fact that in a group situation, I don't know whether I'm that involved with who you want to sit with. What I'm hoping for is that I don't want them to want to sit with everybody.
No,
and
but
so,
that's okay. Oh, they don't want to sit with the same person.
Yes, and I know that it's not realistic, perhaps, and the kids have loves and hates and more or less. But what I'm trying toward, what I dream of, is that, oh, here we are, we're here from 9 to 3, and there she is, she's the teacher. And within the confines of this, we're a family, and I know somebody, a six practically can't walk with anybody but a certain given kid for whatever reasons. And I don't let him choose that kid so much, but I give him the kid because I.
But the question is not because we want to place every child.
No, I'm not.
You know, but
I would be interested in is finding out who's left out. And are we aware that that child
is
left
out?
That's the answer.
I don't want to then rearrange the room to make it.
No, but do you have to ask the group who's left out? I think
you can see it.
That very thing, because I had a lot of complaints, well, from Robbie, you know, that he wasn't sitting, you know, that I was picking on him and keeping him away from being where he wanted to be and so forth. And the group was is controllable enough so that it didn't seem to matter, you know, too much where they sat within certain limits. So I asked them to write down the names of three people who they would most like to sit near, and I said I would try to give them one of these people to sit near. And we had sort of groups of three discs together. And what was interesting was not so much who was left out, but who was picked most. And it was very interesting because one girl was picked most, who was a girl who just about a day before, her mother had called Norman to say that she came home, she was new in the class, to say that everybody hated her and nobody liked her at all, and everyone was picking on her. So this was a very revelation.
But also, I think sometimes you get surprises.
Right.
But I think that just if you can devise questions, I think sometimes these questions sort of solidify things that we don't want, because we don't want children to feel that we're trying to find out who their best friend is so we can place them next to that.
I had a choice.
Or that we would separate the conversation.
That, or the other way.
Yeah.
It was an interesting conversation in the lunchroom the other day. Danny Jaffe asked Nina, who is your friend? She saw it for a long time. And she said, Johnny. So you love Johnny? And Ray Carter said, oh no, it doesn't mean if it's his friend, it doesn't mean that she loves him. And so Danny went on, who's your enemy? And Nina quickly got three or four, five names on it.
This is interesting.
It's just like that. She thought a long time.
It's interesting to watch sociograms during the year, because very often there will be a very significant shift, not in the children who are omitted by the class, but in the children who are the most picked.
Of course, I think one of the worst dangers of the sociogram is that you draw conclusions from it. Because I think you can draw very wrong conclusions.
It might be just that day when she was
or the fact that that a child is chosen may mean a lot of different things. In a particular group climate, this family, this is the one that knows how to evade the teacher. It could mean a lot of different things.
Well, I don't know if we should go about it, but I think it would be interesting for us to have information from the children about some of the things that we're discussing from our point.
Years ago, I recall Yolanda did something like this in the eighth grade, and I was interested in the fact that she was able to elicit the fact that these youngsters had a number of different kinds of leaders, and if it were the baseball field, they would choose one. If it were for leading in a particular scholastic pursuit, it would be somebody else. If it would be judging a decision, it would be somebody else.
That's very mature.
That was very mature. What I'm saying is that, as I recall, she was able to frame questions to get this information, and I think that if we put our minds to it, we might be able to.
You can even find out how a child evaluates himself in relation to other things that you ask of him. And once again, I'm doing this with an emphasis on drawing, but I've learned so much just by, you know, looking over them quickly.
And we also have to read that book, The Brainwashers,
I had to also do a biography first week of the term, and every youngster that's been in this school at any length of time commented on at least one other youngster, and from that you got attitudes, how they react to them. In one case, I think there were two or three. It's diagnostic to see how they write and also to find out something about the child. You kept them in the first week before they decide that you're looking for something, and they just take it as an exercise, and they write very freely because they're writing about themselves and their experience, and you get a lot from that.
Another insight into this is about parent conferences. Just as parents,
adjourn.
About 3:25 this afternoon. I'll try to get a look at him.
Oh, thank you so much, Dr. Marks. I wouldn't do this or impose on you because I know you're busy, but I'm a little worried.
I'm glad to do it for you.
Thank you very much, and God bless you.
Yesterday, once again, somebody told me that I was the most beautiful analyst they had ever seen.
Well, you are beautiful, Doctor.
It's just so very strange, you know, because that's the only thing that they find to say, you know.
I just keep telling you how beautiful you are.
No, but it was as though if I were not an analyst, you know, I would be this very unattractive person. But since I'm an analyst, I am so beautiful, you know.
Oh, no, but you just are beautiful.
Well, thank you very much.
Most of the time, you know, I feel like a fool turning around from the couch, but you are beautiful.
Well, sometimes, you know, I think that interferes a little with the treatment.
Oh, no. Well, no. How can you say that? Yeah,
but I think that it does interfere
no,
with the treatment.
No, it does not.
You know, I tell you, because you are unwilling to look at the reason why you turn around from the couch.
Well, it's because you're so beautiful. Oh, honestly, Doctor, you know you are.
I think that's a screen for something.
No.
But thank you very much.
And you really, you know, most beautiful women don't know what to do with the way they look.
Oh,
but
no.
You dress so beautifully.
Oh, no.
Stop
really
that. Do.
You are not going to get anywhere with your sessions if you stay on like this. Now,
oh, no,
stop.
But you know it's the truth.
Thank you very much. I don't know what this is. It's happening now with all my patients. I think sometimes they all get together and plan it.
Oh, honestly, you know you're beautiful now, don't you?
Yeah. Just before you know the gentleman that comes just before you?
Yes,
George. Joel. Yeah, George Hank. He was...
Is that his name?
Yes.
What's the matter with him?
You know, I cannot tell you what's the matter with
him.
Oh,
well, just a little.
No, not...
Just fill me in.
You are so naughty. You are just terrible, and
but
you won't dress
as
he... No, I won't. I won't. Now, you just stop it.
Is he married? Is he having trouble with
now,
his wife?
Now, stop it. I'm not going to tell you what's happening
well,
with his wife.
Would you tell me if I guess?
No, I will not tell you. Now,
would
don't
you tell me if I'm close?
Yeah,
does he drink? Does
very
he drink?
Naughty. No, I'm not going to tell you. I'm not going to tell you anything. I'm just going to say that he's going through the whole same thing that you are going through.
Oh, really?
Yes, with the beautiful and this and that. And it's very difficult because he has almost homicidal impulses which we are trying to look at and examine. There's no time. He is so filled with, Doctor, you are beautiful, and Doctor, you are this. He's driving me crazy. That's your expression, no? No.
There's just something that I want to ask, and I really do deserve an answer to this.
All right, what's your question? And then we're going to pre-associate.
All right. Is he taking you out, too?
Dr. Schweitzer?
Yeah?
Doctor, I don't want to bother you. Are you busy doing something?
No.
I'm Doris Finch, and my husband is Ed Finch. I don't know if you met him earlier. He was going to go through the hospital.
No, I don't remember.
And we were here in Africa, and we just had to stop and tell you how wonderful we thought it was. What you're doing.
Thank you. Just wonderful. Thank you so much.
I was just so curious, now that I do have a chance to talk to you, exactly what is this reverence for life?
Well, madam, reverence for life is my feeling that God put everything on the earth. For a reason, you see?
Yes,
and
well...
we must respect life, whether it's a blade of grass, whether it's a fly, whether it's an ant.
I agree. Well, of course, I must admit that I use insect sprays and all like that, but then it's different when you live in the city. Don't you think so?
Yeah, I have not lived in the city for... Yes, very many years
then
now.
I think you have to kill them or else they get in the food. They do cause diseases, you know. I better a dead fly than a child. I'm so sorry. Could you look at my throat while I'm here? I think I'm getting a cold.
Yeah, I would be glad to.
Oh, I tell you, it's going to be the most thrilling thing that ever happened to me to say that Dr. Schweitzer examined my throat. I'll just open my mouth.
Yeah, let me look. Say ah.
Ah.
You have the sinus, all right?
Oh.
You have a reddening of the throat.
Oh, can you just tell that? Are you a real doctor? I just wondered that. I mean, are you, you're an MD?
Yes, I am a medical doctor.
The AMA approves it. Weren't you an organist?
I play the organ, madam, yeah.
But, I mean, weren't you one first? You were, weren't you now?
No, the organ has always been my solace.
Do you have an organ here?
Yeah, I have an organ in my house.
Dr. Schweitzer, I wonder if you'd do me a favor. My husband is right outside, just about a mile down the road, taking pictures of lions. I think it would be the greatest thrill in his life if he could take a picture of you at the organ and you'd autograph it for us. Would you?
Well, I'm awfully busy, madame, and I have...
It'll take just a minute.
...many sick patients.
You know, my husband, it's professional courtesy. My husband is a dentist, you know. He's a medical man himself.
I'll see what I can do.
Thank you very much. I'll run and get him. Ed!
Wamba, if that woman comes back, kill her.
Listen, you. Nobody here likes you.
I'm going to faint.
Are you listening to what I'm telling you?
I feel so sick.
You've made yourself thoroughly disliked.
Please, can I have some water?
Just a minute, please. Are you listening to what I'm saying to you?
Oh.
I don't come in here very often, and I want you to understand. You're one of the most disliked patients in this hospital,
Doctor,
and you've done it.
Doctor, I've been calling for you for about a week.
Now, I've had numerous complaints from the nurses. You're ringing the bell. You're asking for medicine. You're doing this. You're doing that. You know, we're not running the hospital only for you.
Doctor,
you know that, don't you?
I faint a lot.
Well, if you're fainting, then we'll take care of it in the morning when I come around teaching the interns.
Oh,
but there's no reason to carry on and fuss like this. Make yourself a nuisance to the nurses. They have a great many people on their hands, you know.
The little thing fell and my foot is down on the floor now.
Now, you cannot treat people this way. For $150 a day, you know, that doesn't make you our boss.
It's so heavy and
we work for the hospital.
Well, can you just pick it up and put it on its weighing my whole body now?
I'm trying to help you, Mrs. Detsky, because if you don't change your attitude, you're going to be a very unhappy lady. These nurses don't have to come in and change the sheets, you know. They cannot do those things.
The sling
broke. It's a lot of work for them shoving you around that bed.
4 days ago and it's just been laying on the floor.
Well, there's no talking to her. I'd like to see Dr. Mittelschmerz, please.
I'm Dr. Mittelschmerz.
You are?
Mm-hmm. Did you call earlier, Mr. Probert?
Yes.
Oh, won't you come in, Mr. Probert?
You're Dr. Mittelschmerz?
Yes, I am.
You're a lady.
Yes, I'm a woman doctor.
You get a lot of kidding?
Pardon?
Do people kid you about it a lot?
Never. May I have your the spelling of your name?
Yes, P-R-O-B-E-R. Dr. Krinst recommended me.
Yes, I know.
Yeah.
Show me the phone. What's your first name, Mr. Prober?
Klaus.
Klaus Prober. And do you want to just give me your age?
Yes, I'm 32.
Mm-hmm. And I think we can go over the childhood diseases after. Suppose you just tell me your symptoms now.
Well, there's a constant kind of, not pain in my stomach, but a discomfort.
Mild discomfort. Is it low down in the abdomen or
Yes, and it's pretty low down.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't matter what I eat or whether I eat or not.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a sharp pain, but
mm-hmm.
it's just like
mm-hmm.
kind of an unpleasant sort of sicky feeling.
The accompanying nausea?
Nausea occasionally, yes. I sometimes wake up nauseated.
Mm-hmm. How long has this been going on?
Oh, about 3 months. That's when I began to think that I thought it would go away.
That's a long time.
Yeah.
Have you been checking your temperature?
Yeah, my temperature is normal.
You've had your appendix removed?
Yes, they took it out.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have it anymore.
Yes, and,
no appendix.
And you've never had any...
I don't really miss it.
Any serious operations of any sort?
No, the appendix was it.
You ever had any trouble with your stomach before?
No, I haven't.
Mm-hmm. Let's just take a look at that stomach. Do you want to just slip off your clothes and get up on the table here?
Pardon me?
Just slip off your clothes. We have this sheet around you. I'll step out it if you feel uncomfortable.
All right, thank you. Dr. Kent certainly was remarkable the way he took out that old appendix. I mean, I was in the hospital 2 days, and he had me up on my feet. And,
yes, that's the policy now.
Yes, they keep you walking.
Was there any after effect?
No, it was a little difficult walking for a few days, but it certainly was a remarkable thing how quickly it happened.
Yes, well, you'd be surprised at consequences that they found occur when you keep someone in bed too long.
All right. All right, I have the sheet on.
All right.
Adhesions and so forth.
Oh, yes. Now, let's see. Let me just take a look at this. Here, I want to lower the sheet. Can you unclench it a little? I just want to lower it a little bit.
Well,
Just unclench it a little?
I can answer any question that you'd like to ask.
Well, I'd like to see if there's any tenderness in the area.
Oh, it's pretty tender.
Yeah.
It is pretty tender. Well, I can tell you that right now. I can just assure you of the tenderness.
Suppose I just take a look. Here, let me just lower the sheet.
Doctor? Doctor! No, there please, Doctor, go. I beg you.
Does this hurt?
Doctor,
yeah. Does this hurt?
No! Doctor,
no, that
doctor, here. Please. No, wait, can you wait just...
No,
sure. Doctor, would you wait just a moment?
Just relax.
Please, I have something to tell you.
Yes.
I'm very ticklish, and I haven't, I haven't actually been to a lady doctor before.
This is just your stomach.
Yeah, I know, but...
The abdomen is very... Come on,
Doctor, please.
Here, wait, now, does this hurt right here?
No. Oh, no, not at all.
All right, and what about here?
No, that's fine.
And here?
It's fine.
There, now, this isn't so difficult. There.
That's all right.
There.
Doesn't hurt.
Mm-hmm. Breathe in, will you? You have quite a chest expansion, don't you?
Thank you.
Go to a gym? You seem to be in good
physical shape. Yeah, well, I play a lot of basketball.
Oh, excellent physical condition.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. I do some swimming, too.
Mm. How old did you say you were?
32.
You're in excellent physical condition.
Thank you.
Well, I don't know too much about your diet. Does your wife cook for you?
I'm not married.
Mm-hmm. I can't seem to find anything the matter with that abdomen. Can you relax the muscles of it for a moment?
They are relaxed.
Oh, really? Yeah. Excellent physical condition.
Thank you.
Tall are you, may I ask?
6 feet.
Mm-hmm. Sometimes you perhaps worry might cause it. What is your profession?
I'm a lawyer.
Are you?
Yes.
Do you do a lot of work?
I'm quite busy, yes. I'm
perhaps
a successful law firm, but I mean, I work myself to death. I have evenings free.
Oh, you are successful without working that much.
Yeah.
Well, I can't seem to find anything really wrong. I do have a suggestion, and that is I think that you should get to bed at about 8:39 and try to avoid any kind of social activity for the present. I would suggest rest.
Rest for a while.
A lot of rest. And come in and I'll check you again in about an hour.